Can we just talk about that during class with samples at the end?
Do we need to mention it to Heidi?
Alas, my wife has left me. All right, let's get started. Before we begin, let's have a word of prayer together. Ask God to bless our study. I think we're leaving those open.
Or not.
I'm hoping you didn't hear me.
We'll scrunch up.
He still didn't hear you.
We really need God to bless us now. Okay. Let's pray. Father, it's such a blessing to gather with your people tonight and to think about the work of spreading your message to others. And we ask you to help us to see better how to do that effectively as we look to you for guidance. In Jesus' name, amen.
Takes a while to process.
That was gracious, thank you. So we're wrapping up tonight our first month. I thought I would walk back through our first three segments and summarize where we've come. Hunter led you through a talk initially about our responsibility to teach lost people, which is what undergirds everything we're doing, this belief that you and I have been called to go share the good news with other people. And by the way, for emphasis, it's a work to which we need to return. I feel terrible that husbands and wives can't sit together. It's tough all over. Number two, we came back and said, now that work's really going to be hard because increasingly our world is hostile to what we have to share. Though don't be discouraged by that, because it's always been hard to some degree to share the word. I would rather be doing this work today than in the first century. Can we agree about that? I think that probably it's easier to do today than the early disciples when they were doing it. And by the way, they were extraordinarily successful, right? So I do think we need to be optimistic about what we're called to do. And then last week, we talked about just having a modest goal getting started. Just go out into your circle of friends and look for opportunities to turn the conversation toward Jesus, to find a chance to plant a seed. Or, what was the other figure we used? Put a stone in their shoe. Talk about something that might bug them and stir them up and get them thinking. By the way, see the opportunity for the next couple of weeks to be inviting people. Do you know how most people, like 80% of people, end up in a church? Yeah, it's extraordinary. It's not about where their house is. It's not about my friends go there. The vast majority of people end up at church because someone come along and said, you ought to come and visit sometime. So we've got two great chances coming up. Kevin Clark is a superb speaker, and his lesson Friday is especially going to be good for young people. So if you've got friends like you who are worried about moral decline in the culture and transgenderism and all that kind of controversy in defense of biblical morality, we've asked Kevin to especially think about young people when he's delivering that message. And then the other event coming up 2 weeks after that is the event with Matt Bassford on suffering. And you've heard me say the number one barrier to faith for young people is squaring a good God with an evil world. And so that's what, look, can you get a more compelling person to speak on that than a guy who's dealing with a terminal ALS diagnosis, right? So I think I've talked to Matt about this extensively. I think he's got some really good things to say. So it's a great invite opportunity. So that's one of the ways that we can go out and talk to people and begin to turn that conversation. Now, I want to be honest with you about that and say to you that even as we try to do that, we're facing some obstacles because we are attempting to turn a conversation in a direction that people do not want to go. Are you with me on that? Let me give you an example to prove that so. How many of you have heard someone say this? Right? You just can't talk about religion and politics. Question, why do people say that? Okay, but go underneath that. Why? They're divisive? What?
Controversial.
But we talk about other controversial stuff, like UT, A&M. And everybody seems okay talking about that controversial stuff.
That's trash talk. That's
terrible. Perhaps they don't feel like they know enough about high law subjects.
I do think that can be a piece of the problem if people are uncomfortable because I don't know what I know enough to talk intelligently about whatever it is that we're getting off into. Why else do people say, not want to talk about religion or politics? You just can't do that. Yes?
Some people just have the mentality of, whether it's religion or politics, you've made up your mind, so there's no point in having that conversation.
And what would lead them to draw that conclusion?
Experience.
They've made up their mind.
Yeah. Yes. So watch on social media when people talk about religion and politics. It happens all the time that someone sees a post and their response is, wow, thank you for enlightening me. You have completely changed my mind. Post nobody ever, right? I think you're correct that people just feel like it's futile and ugly. And it's just better not to go there. So I will confess to you, I feel exactly that way about politics. I didn't always feel that way. How many of y'all remember Reuben? Before Reuben was your intern, Reuben was my kid. He grew up at Dally Road. And I have to tell you, Reuben and I talked politics ever since kid was in high school. I mean, we just talked about it all the time. He has a very different political philosophy than I do. And I mean, we just all the way through college, we talked about politics. And I still love Reuben, and he still loves me, and everything's fine. And we had a whole lot of really interesting exchanges. He's wrong about a lot of stuff, but hence what you and John were saying a minute ago. But we had some very pleasant exchanges. Boy, I won't go there anymore, because exactly what Brian said. I think people are dug in. I think they have their positions, and when you go there, the defenses go up, and they are ready for battle, and all you're doing is throwing rocks at each other, which is kind of unpleasant. So I have to tell you that more than once, I've kind of nudged my wife under the table when we were with some folks and politics was coming up. I'm like, just let it go. Just don't say anything. I don't want to talk about it. Now, I can really get that. What I need to do is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, now political discussions are, the sides are almost aligned on religious beliefs as well. So it's kind of, they're almost the same thing.
They can be, and for some people they are. I think that's right. The thing that I need to do is I need to transfer my feeling about politics to other people's feeling about religion. So I don't know that I ever thought about getting inside the head of an atheist when he's around people who start talking about God and what that feels like. And I mentioned to you last week, how does a gay person feel when a coworker mentions the Bible? What's that like for them? Or maybe some of you have had this experience. Have any of you interacted with someone who had a bad church experience in their history? I've encountered some people like that. And when you talk about church, that is not what they're thinking, what you and I are. They're thinking about some real wounds were inflicted, and that is a really uncomfortable conversation for them. And so just bringing it up, it sets some people in a really, really uncomfortable place. And so I want to be honest with you about that. I think that's a challenge we're going to face. So I want to dig down there a little bit and talk some tonight about the obstacles we face when we start talking, and then begin to point you right at the end about what I think we can do to get past that. Look, I'm all about being honest about evangelism. I don't want to get you in this class and say, hey, everybody you talk to is going to want to receive this. Hey, just go out and do it. Because if I told you that, what would happen? yeah, you go out and find out that is not the real world. So we will really try to be real world in here and figure out how to deal with the real world and not paint a rosy picture that everybody's going to be open and everybody's going to want to hear. So I got three obstacles I want you to consider with me tonight that I think make it hard to talk about religion. The first obstacle we deal with is the obstacle of defensiveness. And it was interesting, some of you used the word when we started down this path a minute ago. So explain to me what defensiveness is. What do we mean when we say people are defensive? Run that around the room. Yeah.
You hear people say you're judging me, or they're thinking you're judging me.
I feel judged. Okay. Good. Yes.
They put up a wall to protect their thoughts and ideas because they don't want them to change.
They put up a wall to protect their thoughts and ideas because they don't want to hear something different. Okay?
They don't want to be wrong.
They don't want to be wrong, says everybody. Yeah, that is a problem. What else? What do you think? What is defensiveness?
Threatening their beliefs.
It's being threatened. I think that's where it actually starts. The feeling of being threatened. My beliefs are going to be challenged or condemned, or I'm going to feel like I'm wrong. Maybe I'm going to feel like I have to change. What else?
That's also true about us. I mean, we're talking like that's just their problem, but that's really our problem too. I don't, what if somebody says something and I don't know how to answer it, and I've never thought about that before, and I'm not ready for that, and it rocks me to my core.
So you are correct. I am thinking about this as an obstacle, but I will let you tempt me down this path just a little. If we find ourselves defensive, we need to change our spirit. Because, and here's the point, we are not defending the traditions, right? We are on a quest to know truth. And every time you talk to somebody, you got to be willing to let your walls down and be transparent and let whatever you believe be tested by truth, right? And if it measures up, it's affirmed. So we shouldn't be defensive because we're not defending anything. We're seeking something. Does that make sense? I'll see where that's going. I know it sounds like I'm just playing word games, but it really is a completely different mentality. Rather than protecting what I've always believed, I'm always trying to figure out what's true and what's right. But in this context, defensiveness is a problem. Well, let's talk about that. Why is it a problem? And I'm going to use your wall figure if that's okay. Sure. Why is it a problem if we're talking to someone and all of a sudden they put up this wall of defensiveness? We'll just go through and knock it down. Tell me why defensiveness is a problem. Why?
Because they've already made up their mind.
Okay. They've already made up their mind, yes?
A lot of times they stop listening to what's being said and start listening to how they feel about it. And it becomes emotional. So instead of, you may say something that's 100% true, that person never heard the truth because they feel like they're being attacked. So they're working on, you know, how they're going to respond or how they feel. So it's not productive.
They're playing defense, right? Right? I got my wall up. I'm protecting my position. And if I'm protecting my position, I'm not doing what?
Listen.
I'm not listening. What else?
Not open to a new point of view.
I'm no longer open to consider something new, to consider a different idea. And again, we're not playing word games here. This is a big, big, big mental shift. When people go into defense mode and stop listening and stop being open, well, now just read the Facebook exchanges and you'll see what that does to people. People go nuts, right? Sometimes even when confronted, have you seen this? When someone's confronted with evidence that says they are plainly wrong, what do they do in the heated Facebook exchange?
They get blocked.
Sometimes when nothing else works. But what I've been amazed by is they just come back with something different, something else to defend their point of view. It's like the other guy didn't say anything at all. I had Anthony and Kathleen.
I was just going to bitch about sometimes we have a fear of change, and sometimes that interferes with us listening, and we throw up defenses.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. Kathleen?
It's not popular either.
Well, especially what we're sharing may be against the grain of culture, and so people are even more so unwilling to hear it. Yeah.
It also turns into, once it turns into a debate, you got to diffuse it. Because a lot of the, I was like that when I was younger, you know, we'd get into a debate. And debate takes away the teaching situation.
Well, I think this is why you see so many conversations about politics and religion go badly. It's because you have two people who have occupied defensive positions. And frankly, if all I'm interested in doing, if all two people are interested in doing is protecting what they already believe, what are you going to accomplish? You see it? See the problem? Yeah.
I spent a lot of my work day negotiating with many people in this room. And I had a mentor or boss a number of years ago use a phrase that took me a long time to understand, but he said, take the corners out of the room. So you don't want people to be defending a position, because you're not going to get anywhere in your negotiation, which I think applies in this situation as well, not that this is negotiated, but you want to get people out of the defensive position. And if you take the corners out of the room, then they're not defending the corner.
So that's what we need to figure out, how to take the corners around out of the room. We'll work with that metaphor too as we go along. Let me not discourage you about this, because I want you to think about the message that the early disciples had to go share with their culture. Wow, dude, I mean, I can totally see my computer spilling out into the floor. What was the message of God, of early disciples to the Jewish crowd? Jesus is the Messiah.
You killed him.
And?
It's not an earthly kingdom.
Where's the old law going? Away. And Gentiles are in. God bless you. Go tell the Jews that, right? Think Acts 6. Think about the dudes from the synagogue of the freedmen going up against Stephen. And you want to talk about a defensive position. They didn't block him. They just killed him, right? Same exact problem. So, yeah, and then what was the message of Christians for the Gentile audience?
One God.
And your gods?
Your gods
are no gods at all. Yeah, that was what they got to go preach to their culture. Your gods are no gods at all. How did that go over in Ephesus? Yeah, remember that story? Do you think that the little trinket makers were thrilled with that message when they heard it? I mean, like, they had a whole riot over that. Talk about defending a position. So I don't want you to get discouraged, but we do need to be realistic. We are talking to people who are easily going to be defensive about the things that we have to share. Which means, as we go into this, what do we got to figure out how to do? Yes. You do have to know where they are.
Break down the walls.
Or better yet, don't let them go up, right? So are any of y'all Trekkies? Because if you're Trekkies, you're going to understand the figure I'm going to give you to remember. As I will not be using tribbles in this class. Though now you've tempted me to find a way. So whenever the Enterprise is getting into dangerous territory and they see an enemy, Captain Kirk tells the crew to do what? Put the shields up. Raise the shields, right? And so as we're talking to people, we want to do everything we can for as long as possible to keep them from raising the shield, put up their defenses. Because when that happens, everything gets a whole lot harder. Really wanted to press that point. How do we do that? How do we talk to people without getting their defenses up? We need to work on that. Okay, so that's one obstacle. The second obstacle we're dealing with, what I'm doing here is piling on, so just get ready. I'm going to take the problem we started with, I'm going to make it worse, by saying that we also have a time problem. It would be great if every time we were going to wade into a conversation like this, we could like come together as a class and talk it through and maybe come up with four or five strategies that would help us avoid, in this specific situation, people getting defensive. The only problem is that is not how conversations happen, right? I know in 3 weeks I got to go into work and we got to talk about the transgender thing. I need to be ready to help people not be defensive about that. How does that conversation come up?
HR. No.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch that.
When you're not expecting it to.
I mean, you're just sitting there having lunch, and someone says, what do you think about this dude who's being a girl and competing in the girl swimming thing? Is that a door?
Yes.
It's a current moral controversy that has all kinds of huge spiritual biblical implications, right? It's an opportunity to talk, and if you're going to use it as maybe a way to begin, when do you have to go through the door? Right then, right in the moment. You don't have any time to go talk it over with some friends. You hardly have any time to think. In fact, if you're reading the tactic books, he talks about a 10-second window. That very often, if we're going to jump on a door, we got about 10 seconds to do it. Otherwise, they go on, or the topic shifts, or the lunch is over, and everybody goes on, right? See the problem? This is not an exactly parallel example, but it makes the point. When I was a college student at Florida College, I was sitting in the local church where I was worshiping, and this older man, Roland Lewis, anybody know who that is? Roland Lewis was teaching all of us young people about how to have good marriages, and someone had brought a visitor that night. His brother Lewis is up there lecturing the class about how to have good marriages and how important it is to do a lot of preparation before marriage. This lady raises her hand and speaks up. She says, I really agree with you. And I think it's also good if couples could live together for a couple of years before they're married, just to be sure they're a good fit. And she said just like that. And I will remind you, this is 40 years ago, people. This is not modern culture. This is one of the moments where she said that, and all of us in the room went, oh. What? I mean, we didn't really do that, but we kind of did. And mentally, we definitely did. Well, I'm pretty sure I was sitting there going, yeah, something like that. Hope y'all got that on the video. Now, I am certain that Brother Lewis, when he prepped that weekend for the class he was going to teach, did not anticipate with a bunch of young Christian college students that he was going to have to address the question of, is it a good idea to live together before you get married? I think he never anticipated. And yet, his position required him in the moment. He had to speak next. And every one of us in the room were glad it was him and not us. We were glad that he had to handle it and do it in a way so as not to hurt this seeking soul who showed up for Bible class that night, right? So you see the problem? That's a really tough place to be in. And when we start wading into conversations and we start trying to grab these open doors, that's where we are, with no notice at all, having to jump in and have this really important conversation. But we are not where Brother Lewis was, because he had to say something. Someone brings up the transgender swimmer controversy over lunch, and we always have the option of doing what?
Going back to our desk.
And if it's not just me and someone else, if it's three or four, I can always.
Not say anything at all.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes we don't. And I don't think it's because we don't have good intentions. I honestly have to tell you, I just haven't grabbed some moments that I had because I honestly didn't know what to do. I'm like, wow, I really ought to say something here. What is it? And I couldn't figure it out, and so I wound up doing nothing at all. Yeah.
That's an easy thing in a way, though, because even a lot of non-Christians and just normal, everyday people think that's not right. The males is competing with the females. So you could kind of open the door beginning with that and then maybe further the conversation.
Maybe. It's, you know, in John 4, I think about Jesus at the well, right? You guys know that story? And everybody's gone. It's just him. And this disreputable woman comes walking up. The easiest thing in that situation would have been to do what? There's no, he didn't have any obligation to say anything to her, right? He just sit there and she'll get her water and she'll leave and it'll be over. And even when he does, go ahead and jump in there and say, hey, can I have something to drink? And she gives him that snitty response. You know, he could have said, okay, I tried, right? Keeps on. So the option of opting for silence is so often available to us. And so when we don't know what to do, I think that's where we default. And we can't do anything about that. We can't do anything about the time. I think we can do something about what to say. And we'll work on that a little bit moving forward. But let me give you a third problem, because it isn't just that we're talking about something that so easily raises defenses and we just have this 10-second window to work with where we need to find something to say, but it isn't just wanting to say something, because we want to say something that is gracious, right? So we're back in Colossians 4, if you want to peek at that text. Hopefully you'll have it memorized over the course of the next 5 or 6 weeks. Colossians 4, verse 5, remember that Paul said, conduct yourself with wisdom toward outsiders. Here it is, underline this one, making the most of the opportunity. That's what I want to do. I don't want to just say something. I want to grab that moment and use it for something good. And so, verse 6, our speech is to be gracious, seasoned with salt. I need to know how to respond to every person. And so it isn't just that I want that. That's the biblical obligation. When I grab this opportunity, what the Lord is saying to me is, get the most out of it. Do the best with it you can. Right? Make the most of it. And so it isn't just that I've got this little window to figure out something to say. I want what I say to be really good. What fits the need of the moment. And sometimes the moment is difficult. You may be talking to someone who's evidenced some hostility toward you and your position, which does what to us emotionally? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, you want to debate this? I've got truth on my side. We can weaponize it, right? So I've talked a lot about this. I probably talk to young people more about this than I have to any other group. I had a group of young people come to me a couple of years ago and say, we really need help talking to our friends because we're not getting anywhere. We're not doing a good job at that. And so it took me about 3 weeks of class to figure out what was going on. Basically, when they came upon opportunities like this and they reached into their toolbox for a tool to work with, when they opened them, the only tool in there was a 10-pound sledgehammer. And their approach to dealing with any spiritual conversation with their friends was, when the topic came up, to pull out your sledgehammer, start wailing at people and beat them to death. Y'all think I'm making this up. This is really true. This is what they would do. It would basically start out with, well, you're wrong, and let me show you why, biblically. Can you say shields up? Yeah. And they said, this isn't working very well for us. And I said, yeah, because you're terrible at this. And so I think that is part of the problem. We get stirred up or we get unduly aggressive and we don't say things that help. We say things that hurt. And so that's another piece of the problem. I want to be gracious. Yes?
I think a lot of times we may go
start off with God's judgment versus God's plan and love.
Yeah, the starting point is really, really important. Yep. I'll fuss at you after class if you say too much.
I really thought about this a lot, and I think that the main thing is that we pray to God for opportunities.
Always.
And then we pray to God for the wisdom of whatever comes out of our mouth, whether we know the answer or not, that He would grant us wisdom to say the right thing at, during that opportunity. And honestly, I can say, I see you. If you look for opportunities, they're really everywhere around you.
Oh, I think when you pray for open doors, that's the prayer God will answer. And I even like, I even think a moment like that is great for a little Nehemiah prayer. Y'all remember Nehemiah 2? When the king says, what do you want? He said, I prayed to my God. I don't think that means he left the rest. Hang on, I need to go pray for a minute. I think he's like, okay, help me right now. And I think that's a perfectly appropriate prayer to pray in our moments. Yes?
I was thinking about like when we encounter people and we listen. That's number one to me, I think. I mean, if you listen to people, you read what's their need. You know, you can see where they're coming from and maybe what's their pain and what's their need. And, you know, and then you kind of go that way.
So let's think about that a little bit because you're tapping into something that I want to blow up and make real big. I was hoping that by the time we got done with this, your feeling would be this kind of feels impossible. Like how do you actually pull that off? And the answer is it isn't. But what we need is a plan. We need to know what we're going to do when a door opens. And we need to know that in advance. We need to know what to say in the moment in advance and then learn it so well that it just is instinctive, right? Where we just do it without even thinking. Like Jose Altuve starting to double play when the ball's hit the second base. I mean, the guy just moves with grace, right? And why is he able to do that? He's done it a thousand times. It's just second nature. And that's how we need to be when we get into these doors that open to us. We need to have a plan, know what we're going to say, and know it so well that we can just execute it. It just happens naturally for us. So, what's the plan? What can we do? I'm going to give you all something to think about that'll, it's kind of tapping into what you were saying, and it's going to be our launching point for the next class period. So I'm going to put this out here so y'all can be thinking about it. I think what's going to have to happen is we're going to have to fundamentally rewire the way we approach people. I think that our instinct when a door opens is to say something. In fact, more than that, I need to say in this setting what is true. So I'm at work, four or five guys sit around having lunch, someone brings up the transgender swimmer, and so I need somehow to say in that conversation, God made them male and female. I need to say that. I need to get that in. I think most religious conversations, that is how we are wired. I got to take this truth I know, and I need to find a way right now to put it on the table. In light of what we've said in class, what may be the problem with doing that? If somebody disagrees on that issue, and my first shot is to say, here's what's right, their brain said, shields up. And they went defensive on me. See the problem? See what I'm saying? And I think so often that is the way we've been wired to talk to people. When they say something that's wrong, fix it. Tell them truth. Tell them what's right. And often that ends up being different than what they believe and causing them to raise their defenses. Is there another way to do that?
Yeah. Tell them, despite what this man does, God still loves him. No matter what your faults are, God still loves him.
I'm going to drive you back even further than that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, inquire what is fueling or what their foundation or what their thoughts are. Because one thing, when you brought up time, if something comes up in the moment, you don't know what to say. A lot of times, other people have a lot of stuff to say. So you say, hey, what do you think? and it gives you time to process, see where they're coming from, and see where you might have a door to provide kind of where you're coming from. And usually a lot of people kind of inherently act on the barter system, and if they provide their thoughts about something and then you provide their thoughts, your thoughts, it'll kind of be like a transaction.
Hopefully. So I want you to really listen to what he just said. I think instead of saying something when that door opens, sometimes it's wiser, often it's wiser to ask something, to drop a question right in that place. In other words, instead of putting what I believe to be true on the table, maybe I need to wait and learn more about what they believe to be true. Does that make sense? How would it help me to know more about what they believe to be true? Sorry?
Listen to
Well, yeah, but how is it going to help me to listen and gather more information from them?
Well, so I'm saying something that's going to raise your defenses, because if they're pro-transgender, you know, you got to be careful not to offend that side while still trying to get them to look at it from a different angle, as opposed to if they're on the other side, it's you talk to them a different way.
Yeah, I'm dropping the God made them male and female bomb before I even know what the people in the conversation believe about that and why they believe it. Maybe everybody agrees with me. Maybe say someone in the crowd's going through an experience with a child who's transitioning. Wouldn't you like to know that before you started answering? Isn't that going to be a different, at least, tone if someone in this conversation is going through that, or is a loved one going through that? You see what I'm saying? And so asking a question is an opportunity to understand their point of view better, understand better where they're coming from. And the other thing it does is it buys me time. When you ask a question, who does the talking?
The other person.
They do. What do I get to do? Yeah. I get to listen, and I get to think, and I get more information so I understand better where they're coming. See what I'm saying? So I don't know about you. I don't want to be judgy of everybody in the room, but I would challenge you, if you have that tendency when the door opens to want to say and put on the table what you believe to be true, I want to challenge you to consider rewiring. It's not that we're not going to say what's true. Ultimately, always have to say what's true. But gathering more information first will help me say it better. Did you have your hand up?
Yes, when you said gathering information and what the brother does also is that in that time of thinking and processing, gathering information, sometimes they can even come out with something that's scripturally based. And not know that you can also expound on that as they're speaking and have scriptures or directions on scripturally directed.
Maybe on some spiritual questions, they may give you information that changes your mind about what you believe. That ain't going to happen with transgender, but I mean, I could have. You wanted in on this.
I was in a class one time with the author. He was talking about how you can control any conversation you're in if you're allowed to ask the first question. We were talking about, you know, taking this conversation, this topic that's been brought up, you want to steer it into a religious conversation or a chance to talk about Jesus. If you're allowed to ask the first question, then you can continue asking questions. You never even have to say anything. You can continue to ask questions about what they've said over and over again until you get the conversation somewhere that's safe for you, you know, to say what you want to say.
So here's the thing that I want to challenge you to consider before we get together next week, and that is, what advantages can you see of opting at the start for questions as opposed to statements of truth? What advantages do you see? Because I think they're numerous. And we'll explore that next time. And where we're headed is, eventually what I'd like to do is preload us with a collection of questions that we can memorize and use when we wade into these conversations. When all of a sudden they come up, we'll have something ready at our disposal that we can grab the 10-second window and hopefully direct the conversation toward Jesus. So we're working on next. Thank you.